Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Report: Rents down 31.5% in past 12 months, by Stuart Doreen. The median rent of an apartment in Midland has dropped for 18 straight months and is down to nearly $700 for a one-bedroom apartment, according to a report from apartmentlist.com. The report shows rents in November are down 3.5% compared to October, 24.5% compared to the start of the pandemic in March, and 31.5% compared to the same time last year. The year-over-year drop is one of the largest in the nation, according to the report from apartmentlist.com. Year-over-growth, or lack of it, trails the state average, minus 2.0%, and national average, minus 1.3%. To put it in perspective, the size of the decline in the drop of rent, it was reported that of the largest cities that apartmentlist.com has data for, six showed rents decreased year over year, and the largest decline was in Austin, 5.6%. The report also shows that median rents in Midland stand at $703 for a one-bedroom apartment and $859 for a two-bedroom. The national average for a two-bedroom apartment is $1,095. The city's rents have been decreasing for 18 straight months. The last time rents declined was in May of last year, the report states. The Midland rent decline trails the drop in Odessa, where rents have fallen 29.9% since March and 36.2% year-over-year, according to apartmentlist.com. The median rents in Odessa were $503 for a one-bedroom apartment and $688 for a two-bedroom apartment. Rent Cafe, on its website, showed an average rent in Midland around $1,533 October 2019 and $1,357 in Odessa in October of last year. Other median rents around the region included $703 for a one-bedroom and $873 for a two-bedroom in Lubbock, $819 and $1,074 in Abilene, and $671 and $871 in Amarillo. This article is entitled, Odessa City Council Extends Mask Mandate for 1 Week, by Caitlin Randall. Odessa. The Odessa City Council on Tuesday unanimously voted to extend Mayor David Turner's executive order requiring that businesses ask customers to wear face masks. Turner announced on November 24th he would be signing a declaration requiring businesses to have customers wear masks or face a $250 fine. Businesses must place signs at entrances informing customers that masks are required and make a good faith effort to enforce mask wearing, according to the order. Only businesses that blatantly disregard the declaration will be fined after an initial warning, Turner said in a statement. He also said that off-duty police officers receiving overtime will conduct periodic inspections and respond to complaints of businesses not complying with the order. The City Council's decision came a day after Medical Center Hospital's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Rohith Saravanan, and two council members held a virtual town hall to address the state of COVID-19 in the community. During that town hall, Saravanan said the coronavirus positivity rate in Odessa is between 35% and 40%, meaning the hospital is estimated, based on testing, that more than one-third of the population has COVID-19. Saravanan also addressed why the concept of herd immunity is not plausible. Besides overrunning hospitals, as rising cases lead to more hospitalizations, he said experts are still unsure what the long-term complications from COVID-19 might be, even for those who don't initially have symptoms. To those people that say, well, let this virus just go through our community and let's be done with it, What if some of this leads to heart disease in the future, he said. You'd want to know. So, no, let's not let this go through our community. Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin reported during a press conference Tuesday that the hospital currently has 92 COVID-19 patients and 31 of those patients are in critical care. He said there are 26 patients on ventilators. Turner said during that press conference that the Odessa Police Department has in the last week been called to 5 businesses because of individuals not following his mask order. He said officers spoke to the individuals who were not wearing masks, and they agreed to comply with the mandate. Fire inspectors have also begun checking businesses to make sure they're operating below 50% capacity, according to Turner. He said they've inspected supermarkets and restaurants and found those businesses to be following the occupancy rule. Businesses in Odessa and Midland were required to reduce occupancy to 50% last week because of an executive order from Governor Greg Abbott regarding high coronavirus hospitalizations. COVID-19 hospitalizations must drop below 15% of total hospital capacity in the Midland-Odessa Trauma Service Area for 7 consecutive days before those restrictions can be lifted. Turner's mask order will expire in 1 week unless renewed again by the City Council. He addressed the Council's vote during Tuesday's press conference. I told Council this morning, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. We have to do what we have to do to get the businesses open where they need to be, he said. This article is entitled Tiny House Village. Field's Edge Breaks Ground on Homeless Site by Caitlin Randall. The Field's Edge has begun construction on a tiny home village for Midland's homeless, intended to give nearly 100 individuals permanent residences. The nonprofit broke ground November 3rd at the site in southwest Midland near Interstate 20 and Loop 250, according to Chief Operating Officer Laura Chandler. An official groundbreaking ceremony was planned for November 11th, but was delayed after staff were exposed to COVID-19. Chandler said the ceremony will be held sometime next year. During the initial phase of construction, 10 tiny homes, a bathhouse and laundry room, and a community building with a kitchen will be built. The missional house John Mark Eccles and his family will live in will be included in the first 10 homes. Once the project is completed, there will be 100 tiny homes, a shared vegetable garden, and amphitheater for community events. Each house will come furnished with basic necessities such as a bed, desk, small fridge, microwave, and coffee pot. The homes will be for single homeless individuals who have been living in Midland County for at least a year. Construction on a water line for the village began Monday, Chandler said, and a general contractor and project manager will be hired this month. She said the nonprofit is accepting applications now for a part-time project manager to oversee construction of the village and serve as a liaison between the general contractor and Field's Edge staff. Early next year, construction on the main buildings will begin. The tiny homes and bathhouse are expected to be completed in June, and the community building is expected to be completed in November 2021. The tiny home village for the formerly homeless is modeled after the Community First Village in Austin, which houses 170 residents. Eccles and his wife Brianna lived at Community First for 4 months to learn how to bring the concept to Midland. Eccles previously told the Reporter-Telegram the village is designed to counteract the root cause of homelessness, which he described as, quote, the catastrophic loss of family, unquote. He said it's meant to fulfill a relational need not met by other entities that may provide only a meal or a place to sleep. It's real life and real people in close proximity feeling supported and loved, he said. This article is entitled, Conoco May Lay Off As Many As 500 Employees. Houston-based company preparing to take over Concho. By Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. ConocoPhillips may dismiss as much as 1/4 of its Houston headquarters staff as the largest independent oil explorer cuts costs and prepares for the takeover of Concho Resources, Inc. Affected employees will be notified as early as February 1st and will receive 60 days advance notice, severance pay, and help finding new jobs, Conoco said in an email on Tuesday. The company agreed to buy Midland-based Concho in October. The $11.4 billion deal is expected to close next year. The process to determine the exact number of impacted employees is ongoing, the company said. However, we anticipate the number of reductions in Houston could meet the threshold of 500 or more. Conoco emerged as one of the stronger independent oil producers from this year's pandemic-driven price crash, with almost $7 billion of cash on hand at the end of the third quarter. But the company is not immune from the slump and has reduced production 22% over the past year, meaning fewer employees are needed. We have been transparent with employees that targeted workforce reductions in certain areas of our business may be necessary from time to time to align organizational capacity with expected future activity levels, Conoco said. The acquisition of Concho will make Conoco a major player in the Permian Basin, the world's biggest shale field, and gives the company the option of growing production in the future. But so far, CEO Ryan Lance hasn't given any indication of a major ramp-up. Last month, he pledged to reinvest only 70% of the company's cash flow in capital spending, indicating a conservative approach to new drilling. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled, City, December starts with two more COVID deaths, from staff reports. Two more Midland County residents have died because of COVID-19 complications, according to information released Tuesday by the City of Midland. The first was a man in his 80s, and the second was a woman in her 20s. Both were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, both were reported to have had underlying health conditions, and both died Monday. The first two deaths announced in December brought the total to 147 during the pandemic. There were 47 reported in November. That was the highest total of any month during the pandemic. It was also the 13th daily report of deaths inside Midland County since November 11th, according to Reporter Telegram records. During that time, the city has reported a total of 44 deaths. This article is entitled, City, Monday set record for most COVID cases in one day, from staff reports. The Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend brought the single highest case count in Midland County during the pandemic, according to the Midland Health Department on Tuesday. For the second time since the city changed the way it has reported the information, the health department reported more than 300 cases in one day. On Monday, there were 314 unconfirmed positive cases. The previous high mark for a single day, not including those from the previous weekend during the pandemic, was 302 on November 18th. This count is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The city also announced two COVID-19-related deaths on Tuesday to raise the total number of deaths to 147. The total number of cases, confirmed and unconfirmed, inside Midland County during the pandemic increased to 10,531 on Tuesday. The city reported that 156 cases were confirmed on November 12th, raising the confirmed total through November 10th to 7,810. The Midland Health Department also reported 2,348 active cases on Tuesday, and that the number of recovered cases topped 5,024. Cases are generally confirmed after patients have been notified by the testing location of the results, and when health department officials have confirmed residency, gather close contacts, or advise patients on guidelines. Due to the number of cases received each day, the staff is currently contacting positive cases and contacts from November 13th, the city reported Tuesday. This article is entitled, Midland Collector, Ellen Noel Art Museum, team up for Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashion, by J.C. Lewis. Midland collector Stephen Porterfield and Ellen Noel Art Museum curator Daniel Zies have worked together for the past couple of years to bring Betrothed 250 Years of Wedding Fashion to the museum. The exhibit, which fills two galleries, opens Thursday with a public reception planned for 7:30 to 9 p.m. Stephen and I have been talking about doing the show for the last 2 or 3 years, but this was one of the times we had momentum, space, and time to do all the work for the textile exhibit, Zies said. The exhibit features 63 dresses from the past 250 years. Zies said he had to create mannequins for the exhibit to showcase the dresses because every person's body is different, and corsets were styled differently as well. It's really fun to be able to work with the textiles again, especially since Stephen is such an awesome collector. The earliest piece we have is 1770, so it's been exciting to work with dresses from different eras. The public was able to contribute wedding portraits for the exhibit, and 3 modern dresses are on loan. We did a call out to the community to submit their wedding portraits, Zies said. I think we have 40 portraits from different periods and eras, which has been fun to incorporate into the exhibition. Porterfield has been helping the Ellen Noel Art Museum with fashion exhibitions for 25 years. The Midlander said he has been adding to his collection of wedding dresses for more than 30 years. The earliest wedding gown I have was first created in 1740, he said. We decided to do 250 years of brides because I could do 1770 to current fashion. Dresses have been accessorized with bonnets, veils, and jewelry pieces. Some of the items are original from the time period, and others have been recreated from painting references. Porterfield wanted to showcase the full experience of styling. The exhibit also has wedding shoes, including some white leather boots from the 1970s and white kidskin slippers from the 1840s. Porterfield has spent about 1,500 hours restoring the dresses to original form. This has been the first time he has seen a lot of the dresses on mannequin, revealing details Porterfield didn't notice at first. We didn't know until we mounted that couture piece that looking from the front, the bodice is a heart, he said. But you don't see that when it's just in a box. Wedding dresses weren't always white either. Wearing white became popular when Queen Victoria wore a white wedding dress in 1840. The exhibit features different colored dresses, including one that seems to be from a Christmas wedding. People think wedding dresses have to be white, but in the early times they weren't, because they bought the best fabric they could and made something they could wear again, he said. Porterfield said this is a historical and learning exhibition that will teach visitors when it became popular to wear white wedding dresses. Visitors will see how fashion changes throughout the years and continues to repeat itself, he said. When they see this original 1800 gown that Josephine Bonaparte would have worn, then look at this 19-teens wedding gown, which is 100 years later, and can see that it is inspired by the 1800 gown, he said. They will see that fashion repeats itself over and over, which becomes very evident in the other gallery where the 20th century dresses are located.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, December 2, 2020. Midland artist to host holiday party. Midland artist Kayla Barker will be hosting an open studio and holiday party to thank clients and collectors, according to a press release. The event is 5 to 8 p.m. December 8 at 909 West Kansas Avenue. Attendees can shop Barker's current encaustic art and fine art prints. Barker released her new collection, European Summer, this summer. The collection features medium format film photo encaustic artwork documenting 5 years of vacations in Europe. Other pieces, including fine art prints, will also be on display. Midland ISD runoffs. Districts 1 and 4. Early voting times today, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting location, Elections Office, County Annex Building, 2110 North A Street. Sample ballot, Midland ISD Trustee, District 1, James E. Fuller, Michael Booker, Midland ISD Trustee, District 4, Steve Fargus, Katie Wallace Joyner. 2020 Holiday Shipping Dates. Recommended sending dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, December 15. First Class Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Service, December 19. Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. When it's open, U.S. Postal Service, Downtown, 100 East Wall Street, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Village, 2315 West Louisiana Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Graves, 3304 West Wadley Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. Claydesta, 612 Veterans Air Park Lane, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. GMF Midland, 1000 Loop 40, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Longtime banker acquires Snyder Bank. Longtime West Texas banker John E. Grist on Monday acquired a controlling interest in Snyder's West Texas State Bank, according to a press release from the bank. Grist assumed the position of chairman and chief executive officer. Mark Williamson will continue as president and Daryl Colley as executive vice president and chief financial officer. Grist's son, Jackson E. Grist, who is an elementary orchestra teacher at Midland ISD, will serve on the board of directors of West Texas State Bank. Jumbarito hosts WTFB fundraiser. The West Texas Food Bank is partnering with Jumbarito for the Give Yourself. The restaurant chain has pledged to donate 50 cents for each Jumbarito Revolutionary Rewards card visit through December 17, which will provide two meals to a person in need, according to a press release from WTFB. During this time, each customer who presents their rewards card will be entered into a drawing for 1,000 reward points. Jumbarito is operating through call-in orders picked up curbside and drive-through. This is the 11th year Jumbarito and the West Texas Food Bank have partnered during the holidays. Last year's promotion raised $11,403 and provided 45,612 meals, according to the release. Marfa Public Radio's fundraiser goes online. A fundraiser for Marfa Public Radio, Marfa Comes to Midland, will be an online auction, according to the station's website. The auction continues through December 11. Items include Big Bend-inspired tours, dinners, hotel stays, and adventure packages. Featured items include a tour and cocktail reception at the Donald Judd Home, a two-night stay at Cibolo Creek, and a two-night stay at Willow House. A photo shoot at the Museum of the Southwest and a picnic at the museum are also up for auction. Destination and travel packages will be coordinated according to medical and county officials in regard to the ongoing pandemic, according to the website. For more information, visit https://events.handbid.com/auctions/marfa-2-midland-online-auction. Watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Hello, this is Michael, reading the local opinion column from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. Our View. Use time left during pandemic to make positive lifestyle changes. We think it is safe to say that many Midlanders are going stir-crazy because of COVID-19. It doesn't have to be that way. The pandemic doesn't require that you stay at home at the expense of your health. For those who are able, get out of the house and take a walk. Use the days, weeks, and months left in the pandemic as an opportunity to start or continue a positive lifestyle choice. The Mayo Clinic reports that exercise is important for your body and mind. Regular exercise can help you maintain a healthy weight, keep your blood sugar and blood cholesterol levels in check, increase bone strength, and help manage stress, just to name a few benefits. Sounds like something we could all use when everyone seems to be on edge. The Mayo Clinic added, for healthy adults, the recommendation is 150 minutes of aerobic exercise each week. That includes activities such as running, biking, jogging, swimming, brisk walking, and dancing. Many people break up their weekly aerobic activity into 30-minute sessions 5 days a week. In addition, your exercise routine should include at least two 20 to 30-minute sessions of strength training a week, which many people have a tendency to forget. Remember, too, that even if you don't get to the recommended level of exercise sometimes, any amount of exercise, even if it's just 10 minutes of walking, has benefits. No one is asking you to join a gym or participate in workouts that might put you at greater risk to acquire COVID-19, but it is not too late to start walking around the block. Set modest goals and see where that takes you over the course of a few weeks and then a few months. It doesn't require a mask, just a willingness to take those important first steps. It is important to note that many Midland County residents who have died because of COVID-19 complications were said to have had underlying health conditions. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention states those conditions include obesity, severe obesity, smoking, and type 2 diabetes. A Johns Hopkins Medicine report states that a healthier lifestyle is as simple as exercising. Aim for at least 30 minutes of physical activity most days of the week. Improving your diet. Have a diet that is high in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, olive oil, and fish, and low in meat, sugar, and processed foods, which helps your cells function better. Getting quality sleep. Stopping smoking. Johns Hopkins researchers, in conjunction with scientists from other centers, have found that quitting decreased middle-aged smokers' risks of dying early by almost half. Challenging your brain. Make it a goal to keep learning as you age. For now, those who haven't done so and are able can take advantage of the opportunity that has presented itself. The pandemic might have restricted many Midland County residents, but that doesn't mean we can't get out for our own good. That opportunity certainly exists for many.
This is the obituary column, Wednesday, December 2nd. Ama Margarita Perez. Ama Margarita Perez, 68, of Barstow, Texas, passed away on November 30th. A viewing will be held at 2 p.m. with a prayer service to be held at 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 3rd, 2020, at the branch at NPW at 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, December 4th, at the branch at NPW. Ama Margarita Perez was born on June 2nd, 1952, in El Barrio de los Montoya, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Gilberto Montoya Sr. and Manuela Lujan Montoya. She was a beloved daughter, sister, wife, aunt, mother, and grandmother. She is survived by her husband Rudy Perez, son Lupe Jaquez and wife Lorena, son Jorge and wife Sarahi Navarrete, and four grandchildren. She is also survived by her sister Obdulia Vasquez, sister Lucia Aranda and husband Florencio, sister Juanita Salcido and husband Enrique, brother Camilo Montoya Sr. and wife Consuelo, brother Gilberto Montoya Jr. and wife Romelia, sister Zolima Caballero and husband Jesus, and Edilmira Soltero and husband George, and countless nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents Gilberto Montoya Sr. and Manuela Lujan Montoya. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the American Heart Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. J. Ventura Triana. J. Ventura Triana, 86, Midland, Texas, passed away November 25th. Evening viewing will be Wednesday, December 2nd from 5 to 6 p.m., followed by the reading of the Rosary at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, 405 North Terrell Street, Midland. Funeral services will be Thursday, December 3rd at 2 p.m. at San Miguel Catholic Church, 1100 Camp Street, Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 South Texas Highway 349, Midland. He is survived by his wife, Maria Villegas de Triana, his children, Lauro, Francisco, Hilario, Guadalupe, Lisa, Jesus, and Zefe Triana Villegas, 19 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. Ramon Leyba Sr. Ramon Leyba Sr., 75, of Midland, passed away November 22nd. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, December 4th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, December 5th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ruben E. Gonzalez. Ruben E. Gonzalez, 82, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, November 24th. The viewing will be held Wednesday, December 2nd, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m., with rosary that evening at 7 p.m., Funeral services will be Thursday, December 3rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine, with Father David Herrera officiating. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Ruben is survived by his son, Eulalio R. Eddie Gonzalez, his daughters Gracie Mata and Diana Gonzalez, one brother, two sisters, and numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and cousins.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. Medical workers brace for a new surge, by Frederico Martinez. Outdoor medical tents and morgues overflowing with the dead is the grim, apocalyptic picture Odessa health officials say they fear will become the reality as post-Thanksgiving weekend COVID-19 cases are expected to surge in the upcoming weeks. Health officials for weeks have been sounding the alarm that the COVID virus is spiraling out of control and that local resources are being overwhelmed. During a Tuesday press conference, their message became blunter. We need another weekend to see what comes out of Thanksgiving, said Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Robith Saravana. We're already pretty full. A few more patients and we're going to be in the same position as El Paso, with tents outside. Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin agreed. We've already started prepping an additional 20 to 25 beds in anticipation of an increase after Thanksgiving. On Tuesday, Tippin reported that MCH is currently housing 92 COVID patients, with 50 patients listed in critical condition and 26 on ventilators. Tippin did not say how many employees are currently off work due to COVID. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said her hospital has 29 COVID patients with 16 in critical condition and 6 on ventilators. Currently, there is 36 medical staff off work due to COVID, and over the weekend, a respiratory therapist that had been with the facility for 30 years died, Brown said tearfully during the call. Health officials did confirm that a mobile morgue requested by the county has already arrived and is being used to store bodies until autopsies can be conducted.
Mayor David Turner last week signed an ordinance that reduces business capacity to 50% and also requires customers to wear masks in businesses. City Council on Tuesday unanimously voted to extend that ordinance, which was initially in effect for 7 days, Turner said. Turner said council's actions was necessary. Who ever thought we would see a tent in Midland, Turner said. Whoever thought we'd have a mobile morgue in Odessa. What's happening is real. MCH and ORMC have been offering free COVID-19 testing this fall thanks to a funding contribution from the city. ORMC tested a total of 1,009 people with results for 888 people already processed, Brown said. Of those processed, 315 people, or 36%, have tested positive. MCH has tested 3,000 people with 65% returned as positive, Tippin said. That's very concerning, Tippin said. Also from the front page, stepping down. The caption reads, Ector County District Attorney Bobby Bland poses for a photo in an Ector County courtroom Monday at the Ector County Courthouse. Bland has decided to retire from the DA's office and go into private practice. Bland became the DA in April 2006, and December will be Bland's last month in the position. DA leaves for private practice. Bland, to specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury cases, by Bob Campbell. The longest-serving district attorney in Ector County history will leave office January 1st to open a private practice. Never opposed for re-election since he was appointed in 2006 and bested a half-dozen competitors for the Republican nomination that year, Robert Newton Bobby Bland IV enjoyed his work but said he felt it was time for a change. County Attorney Dusty Gallivan ran unopposed to succeed him and now seeks legislative approval to assume the prosecution of all misdemeanors and juvenile and child protective services cases, leaving County Attorney-elect Greg Barber with only civil cases. I've spent almost 15 years as DA, the longest anybody has ever served in the county. And I accomplished pretty much everything I wanted to do, said Bland, 51. We eliminated the backlog of cases years ago. With the population growth and things going on, our caseload had more than doubled from 1,700 to 2,000 a year to more than 4,000. Before we transferred to being paperless, we gave things to defense attorneys with copies, tapes, and CDs. Now that we're all digital, we're able to send discovery out almost as quickly as the defendants are indicted. Bland graduated from Texas A&M in 1991 and Texas Tech School of Law in 1994 before working as an assistant DA under John Smith and in private practice. He and his wife Heather have 3 children. Asked if the county commissioner's refusal to give his assistants the pay raises he wanted was a factor in his decision, Bland said, no, you do get tired of facing things like that, the politics and bureaucracy, but then everybody feels like they deserve more money. I've been having a tough time hiring people and keeping them because the cost of living is high in Odessa. Currently, one short of a full staff of 15 assistant prosecutors, Bland has a total of about 30 employees. He will specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury cases in a downtown office building that he is negotiating the purchase of. "I won't be seeking justice for the state of Texas anymore," he said. "I'll seek it for my clients. I dedicated 15 years of my life to doing my best to serve the public and serve the interest of justice, and now I will serve my clients one at a time." Bland emphasizes that he didn't become an administrator but kept trying cases personally, including some of the most high profile, and only lost one involving a shooting at the mall in 21 years as an assistant and DA. "I loved being the DA and being a prosecutor," he said. "It's been my passion, but I will enjoy not having the stress of being the head of a pretty large organization and serving at the whims of the legislature and commissioners. I look forward to being a private citizen and representing my clients. With all my experience, I'm poised to do a really good job." Two of Bland's former assistants, Gallivan and Crane Winkler County DA Amanda Navaretti, said one reason they liked working for him was that he gave them a lot of autonomy. "Bobby cares about justice and doing the right thing," Navaretti said. "He encouraged us to work toward our goals, and several of us ran for DA and judge. He also provided the guidance we needed during trials, popping in for final arguments, and having an open door so we could go in and talk about our cases. Noting that ex-Bland assistant Brooke Hendricks is now a court-at-law judge here, and that Scott Lay became county attorney and a court-at-law judge before going into private practice, Navaretti said, Bland has been different from a lot of Texas DAs in as much as his assistants were under less pressure. "Our job was to see that justice was done, even if that meant ultimately dismissing or rejecting a case," she said. "Bobby let everyone have their own personalities. Some DAs are all about the conviction rate and how many trials you have, but he didn't put that extra pressure on you." "After I became a DA myself, I could always call and get his advice on things that came up." Gallivan said Bland made the tough decisions and the best decisions possible based on the knowledge he had without regard for political consequences. "He let us do our jobs and didn't micromanage," Gallivan said. "He was there for support." Along with Navaretti and Gallivan, Bland said he's had many exceptional lawyers work for him, including current first assistant Lisa Borden and the late Justin Cunningham and Lenny Bruce. "Of course you want convictions and sentences, but the most important thing is to make sure you're doing the right thing on every case, whether it's popular or not," he said. "If for some reason you can't make a case, you shouldn't try it, because the worst thing you can do is to go after somebody when you shouldn't just because you can."
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with another story from the front page of the Odessa American, Wednesday, December 2nd. Landgraf files debt bill. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, filed House Bill 664 on Monday to require any ballot measure for approval of the issuance of bonds or other public debt to be submitted to voters and taxpayers only during a November election, removing the option to vote on debt during lower turnout elections. By requiring debt elections to be on the ballot in November, when turnout is highest, HB 664 will ensure more voters have a chance to consider whether or not they want their local governments to take on more debt, Landgraf said in a news release. over the last decade, there has been a correlation between increasing local government debt and rising property taxes, a news release detailed. In many cases, debt elections are held in May, when voter turnout is minimal compared to November elections, the release stated. This bill simply means that government must appeal to the largest number of voters and taxpayers before incurring more debt, Landgraf continued in the release. We cannot allow runaway debt and property taxes to erode the Texas dream for our children's children. More voters means more transparency and accountability, and that is a good thing, especially when it directly impacts your wallet. Landgraf and the other members of the Texas legislature will convene for the 87th Texas legislative session on January 12, 2021. Members of the Texas House and Texas Senate may begin filing bills for the 2021 legislative session as early as November 9th. The Texas legislature meets at the Texas Capitol Building for a 140-day regular session beginning the second Tuesday in January, every odd-numbered year, to vote on proposed legislation and pass a balanced state budget.
Another article from the front page, Landgraf Files Debt Bill, by OA News at OAOA.com. Austin. State Republican Brooks Landgraf from Odessa filed House Bill 664 on Monday to require any ballot measure for approval of the insurance of bonds or other public debt to be submitted to voters and taxpayers only during a November election, removing the option to vote on debt during lower turnout elections. By requiring debt elections to be on the ballot in November when turnout is highest, HB 664 will ensure more voters have a chance to consider whether or not they want their local governments to take on more debt, Landgraf said in a news release. Over the last decade, there have been a correlation between increasing local government debt and rising property taxes, a news release detailed. In many cases, debt elections are held in May when voter turnout is minimal compared to November elections, the release stated. This bill simply means that government must appeal to the largest number of voters and taxpayers before incurring more debt, Landgraf continued in the release. We cannot allow runaway debt and property taxes to erode the Texas dream for our children's children. More voters mean more transparency and accountability, and that is a good thing, especially when it is directly impacts your wallet. Landgraf said, and the other members of Texas legislature will convene for the 87th Texas legislative session on January 12, 2021. Members of the Texas House and Texas Senate may begin filing bills for the 2021 legislative sessions as early as November 9th. The Texas legislature meets at the Texas Capitol Building for a 140-day regular session beginning the second Tuesday in January every odd-numbered year to vote on proposed legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Council backs Turner's COVID mandate, by Frederico Martinez. The Odessa City Council on Tuesday voted unanimously to extend an ordinance limiting business occupancy to 50% for another week because COVID-19 cases remain alarmingly high countywide. Council also agreed to continue a mask mandate, which requires employees and customers in businesses to wear face coverings. several council members noted that they still had reservations about the ordinance and mask mandate, but wanted to show support for local health officials who say the measures are necessary. Originally, I had a lot of issues about the mandate, admitted Councilwoman Peggy Dean. I will say, with the evidence now and health officials pleading with me, I believe it's incumbent that we send a message that we support them. Councilman Steve Thompson concurred. I hate it. I don't like it, but it's necessary. Wearing a mask is about showing respect for others. Dean and council members Michael Shelton and Mary Willis said it was also important to show support for Mayor David Turner, who has taken a leadership role in the community to address the coronavirus. Turner last week decided to sign the business occupancy ordinance, even though he was publicly criticized for the action, and it might cost him the opportunity to remain on city council. He is competing against Denise Swanner for an at-large council seat that will be determined during a December 15th election runoff. We need to support this and show leadership, Sheldon said. Yes, we're going to receive some negative feedback, but we need to do the right thing. Odessa Police Chief Michael Girk said, overall, the community is doing a great job of wearing masks and complying with the ordinance. During the Thanksgiving weekend, the police department received 8 complaints of people refusing to wear masks. 5 people were located and issued warnings, Kirk said. The Medical Center Health System on Monday reported 9 people in Ector County died of COVID-19-related deaths during the Thanksgiving weekend. Turner signed the ordinance after being notified November 13th by the Texas Department of Health that coronavirus patients had been taking up more than 15% of hospital beds in Ector County for 7 straight days, an alarming rate that means the virus is spreading unchecked and placing a major strain on already overburdened health facilities. Ector County's rate last Tuesday was holding steady at 23.95%, Turner said. Turner has said the ordinance and mask mandate may need to remain in effect at least 3 weeks before COVID rates begin to decrease. 306 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through September 30th, the city has spent $62,843.51 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 9,140. Ector County negative, 33,700 out of 43,571 tested, with 661 pending, 151 cases. Recovered, 7,298. Active, 1,691. ECISD daily cases, 23 students, 11 staff. Texas, 1,184,250 confirmed, with 10,761,759 tested. Total Texas deaths, 21,549. U.S. cases, 13,447,627 total confirmed and 200 67,302 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.text.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/txtrijlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6nttuq. Finally, from the front page, quick hits. Empty stocking is empty. With only 16 days to go in the 26th year of the Empty Stocking Fund, our goal of $100,000, and it won't be met without your help. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families during the annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Juan, not his real name, is a single father working two jobs and needs help. Funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than 2 million donations online. Early voting. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through December 4th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on December 7th and to the 9th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. December 10th and 11th. Locations for early voting include the Ector County Court Annex, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not a location. Election Day locations will include the Global Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Voting hours will be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.